Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. On today's podcast, host Emily Ananuevo gets to know portfolio manager Patrice Quirion a little better. Patrice shares how he first got into investing and his overall investment style for his funds. For Canadian investors, Patrice manages Fidelity Global Concentrated Equity Fund, International Concentrated Equity Fund, and a few private pools. Patrice started with Fidelity in 2005, out of school. And for him, picking stocks and investing isn't just a job. He loves what he does, where he works, and who he works with. Patrice shares how investing is about gathering research and taking calculated risks. He expands on the benefits of working for a global company and how he accesses Fidelity's global research resources, a big research team spread out all around the world, local to their own region, but working towards the same company-wide goal. And although he is based in Toronto, he manages global portfolios and leverages information from the local analysts worldwide. Emily also comments on the advantages of investors working with financial advisors to create a plan to achieve their financial goals. This podcast was recorded on February 25th, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
As an investor, reading through financial headlines these days can be challenging and somewhat confusing, but having someone to guide you and make sense of all that market noise can help. Financial advisors, for example, help you navigate through the noise and stick to your financial goals. Portfolio managers do similar work, but work directly with your investment funds. Quite simply, they make crucial decisions that involve your money. Joining us on the show today is someone who knows how to navigate that market quite steadily. Portfolio manager Patrice Quirion is a 16-year veteran at Fidelity and is at the helm of four global international mandates. Welcome, Patrice. So great to have you on the show today.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. And Emily, my pleasure to be with you today.
Glad to have you here and looking forward to our conversation. Let's begin with a bit about you. You've actually been with Fidelity for 16 years with the company right out of school. What has that journey been like for you? And were you always interested in investing at an early age?
Yeah, thanks for the question. It's an interesting way to put a personal touch. My story started as a somewhat introverted small town boy who really liked math. And I was asking the question at the very young age, how can I benefit from that? Or what can I do with that skill? So I was actually the paper boy delivering newspapers for the best part of my youth, trying to save a little bit for university. And I had the brilliant idea of looking at a financial section of those very newspapers to put literally all of my money in Nortel in 1999, which you can imagine how that ended. So after losing pretty much all of my, at the time seemed like a lot of money, today it's a small amount, that learned a valuable lesson. But it just really spiked my interest towards understanding how do stocks move? How can something like the implosion of the tech bubble actually happen? And basically from that point on, I've just been reading and trying to learn as much as I can about the markets and companies. And it led me to go to university in Montreal. Largely, I went to HEC because at the time they had a really good student investment fund, which I literally spent a lot more time like analyzing stocks and running portfolios as opposed to studying throughout my undergrad. I'd set my eyes on going to work for a large US asset manager. Initially, I taught in New York, ended up being in Boston through Fidelity. And I'm still very grateful to that day to have had the opportunity to join like what is really like a world scale, world class asset manager right after school, after a short trip to Kingston to do my master's at Queen's. and really learning from the best and having the opportunity to develop as an investor at what I think is one of the best program to become a great investor. So like everyone else on their team, I started as an analyst covering a variety of sectors, including commodities, industrials, financials. I had expressed a lot of interest towards doing something that's quite broad in nature. So a global mandate, ideally. And I was given the opportunity to start proving myself after proving myself, like everyone proves themselves as an analyst, got the chance in 2013 to start managing the first global mandate, which I still run today, which is called Global Concentrated Equity. And it's how it works at Fidelity. You prove yourself, you perform well, you show that there is a sound process, that you use the resources internally, and we are giving those talented investors more responsibilities. And for me, it came through additional global and international mandates over the past now 8 years in charge of these portfolios. So in a nutshell, that's my quick story.
That's wonderful. What an incredible story. I mean, I knew you've been here for a while, but I didn't know your passion started, you know, so long ago. So wonderful to hear that. You've called yourself a contrarian investor. You talk a lot about favoring the unloved parts of the market. I just wanted you to take the opportunity to elaborate on this and your investment style.
Absolutely. I think it's pretty key to, I think for any investor to basically set forth what's your style going to be. This is an hyper-competitive market. There are thousands of extremely smart investors that are looking at the stock market every day trying to benefit and make money from it. So how will we have an edge? So first, we have an edge through the resources we have here at Fidelity. We have like an amazing team of analysts scattered all over the world. So we have truly like local insights on every company out there. But as a portfolio manager, it's important to set our style of how we will build the portfolios in light of that information we're getting. And for me, it comes with two very like fundamental beliefs. My first belief is that the market over a mid-term period, call it over like a period of 2, 3, 4, 5 years, tends to overreact to trends that establish themselves. So just imagine if something has been in favor, doing well for quite some time. I'm not talking like doing well for a few weeks or a few months, but when it's been lasting for a while, that becomes consensus. That becomes what's catching everyone's attention. That becomes what everybody wants to own. And as a result, my belief is it becomes overpriced. And the same is true on the flip side of that, where if something or a part of the market is for whatever reason not as hot, like out of favor, as a result, most investors will shy away from that, look at something more exciting in the short term. And as a result, that area of the market is likely to become underpriced. So as a contrarian investor, the second tenet to my beliefs is that a lot of that is driven, yes, by fundamentals. So what's the company's like financial performance and earnings and free cash flow? But there is an important element of sentiment, of emotions that's tied on top of that. And this is what's leading to the excesses. And my belief is that that sentiment mean reverts over time. So what feels good might feel good for a few quarters, for a few years, but won't feel good forever. At some point, that sentiment turns. And to me, that leads to a really strong opportunity to take the contrarian view, go in these areas of the market where we've done the work, we know they are sufficiently underpriced because they are out of favor, and let's go in those parts of the market and buy the best companies possible that really put time on our side, where we can take a longer term view than most and say, I will simply wait for that sentiment to reverse. I will wait for the economic cycle to reverse. I will wait for a company specific situation to reverse. And when it does, sentiment will come back, earnings will improve, multiples of valuation will improve, and that's how we will generate abnormally higher than average returns. And that's the entire process that I'm trying to accomplish through all of my portfolios ever since I'm running them.
wonderful summary there. And just, it's just so interesting to get your perspective on things. You've been here for a long time and it's obviously been working. So just moving on to discussing the market in general, I mean, 2020 is past us. You've called 2021 is going to be an interesting year. I wanted to get your, engage your temperature of the markets from your perspective and where we are in the market cycle. I know pretty hefty question there, but if you can just give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll try to touch on a few different points. First, I think a lot of investors today would look at the broad indices and say we're making all-time highs or about to in most large indices, most parts of the world. And as a result, maybe it doesn't feel like the right time to invest. I would actually disagree with that. And like everything in life, like the answer is rarely as easy as the general like high level reflexes you might have looking at something. In the case of the market right now, I think there are areas where clearly valuations are expensive, sentiment is probably overly positive, and that are, in my opinion, at risk. And this is mostly like what I would call like more speculative areas of the market at this point. I won't go as far as calling them bubbles, but there's probably some bubble-ish behavior in parts of the market. We see it on some specific stocks, like especially like in the past few months. We're seeing it on like entirely like new asset classes, like cryptocurrencies. We're seeing it on thematic that people want to be tied to, but that's difficult to implement. Think about like all of this renewable energy, electric vehicles, all of that trend, which are like very valid trends. It's just there's not many ways to get exposure to that. And as a result, it leads to like basically piling up of investments into very few companies that leads to, in my opinion, like valuations that are disconnected from fundamentals. But if we take a bit of a step back, it goes further. And without being as excessive, we've seen trends just lasting for so long now. And back to what I described earlier, when trends last for too long, it's likely to lead to a market that overshoots. I think we look back ever since the financial crisis of 2009, what has been working? It's technology, it's large cap, it's the US market, it's the US currency, it's quality versus not, it's growth versus value, it's defensives versus cyclicals. And all of that is very tightly correlated. So it's no surprise that all of that moved together. But now that it's been lasting for so long, and especially that it accelerated to the upside as a result of the COVID pandemic, I think we need to be very careful about simply looking back in the rearview mirror and say, that has been working for 10 years, that's what will keep working going forward. And the reason I say that, and this is like quite critical to understand, those changes in market leadership, so those long-term trends, at some point they break and something else takes the relay. And that's what we call inflection points. An inflection point tends to happen at the inflection point of an economic cycle. And I think we are right there right now with basically an economy that was actually slowing down even pre-COVID, led by China, led by trade war, like corporate uncertainty, commodities that were under pressure, emerging markets that were under pressure. And you put the COVID pandemic on top of that, and we just have like a period of now 3 years ever since 2018, where we are into a weaker market, like into a recession that culminated with a recession. But now we're starting to see like the light at the end of the tunnel. And I think we can make a case for a very strong economic recovery coming out of COVID. And as we enter this new cycle, it's quite likely that the stocks that will take the leadership from here will be those cyclicals, like those reopening plays that have been so hard hit by COVID closures. And I think this is essentially where we are in the market. Parts of it are very expensive, very speculative. You need to be careful. But at the same time, there are still other areas of the market that are early in their cycle, still generally quite attractively priced, although a little bit less than, let's say, 3 or 4 months ago. But that is likely to be where you want to be exposed, not only for the next few months, but I think for the next few years.
Wow, fantastic, Patrice. Just so much there. Can you speak to your research team and who supports you? Are they located globally? And I know you mentioned we have, you know, research analysts all over the world. If you just want to briefly, you know, answer that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's key for anyone who invests with Fidelity to understand how we're structured, because I do think it sets us apart from pretty much everyone else in the industry. And I mean that globally, not only in Canada. The structure is that we have dedicated analysts that will cover, call it 25 to 30 stocks in one given subsector, in one given country or geography. We have that local presence, obviously, here in Canada, in the US, across Europe. So we have local presence, obviously, in London, but also in France, in Italy, in Germany. You go in Asia, we have a local presence in Japan, in China, in Hong Kong, in Singapore, in India, in Australia. And essentially, it puts together a team that's all working for the same purpose, all working to help any portfolio manager that has interest in their securities. But that team is local and they know their companies inside out better than pretty much anyone else out there, because that's what they're focused on. And as a global portfolio manager, although I'm based here in Toronto, I have access to that team of experts, not only analysts, but portfolio managers that might run country-specific funds in other parts of the world, and that are obviously by definition like true experts on the stock markets of their respective countries. And I'm trying to filter all of that information that comes to me and see what fits in that contrarian process, what fits in that quality lens that I'm trying to apply. And I think it leads to us having better information than most, with us having the flexibility to use a longer time horizon than most to capture those opportunities that might start to exhibit themselves in the short term, but that truly play out over a longer time period.
Great way to put it. Patrice, I wanted to get to your funds and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about how you are actively positioning to capture as much upside as little downside in 2021. I mean, you alluded a little bit in your answer before, you were on sort of the precipice of an economic recovery here. So what are you doing specifically in your global funds to capture that?
Yeah, so I'll start with how you phrase the question, because I think it's important to understand that. How do you capture as much of the upside and as little of the downside? The truth is, this is really difficult to do. Almost by definition, it's about taking risk, calculated risk, but taking that risk at the right time is what matters. So to me, it's not bluntly trying to say, we have an incredible edge and I will realize all the upside and none of the downside. I think this is not realistic. I think it's about having more information than most to be informed about when to take risk, when to remove risk, and where to take that risk. And where doesn't mean only in terms of geographies. It especially means in terms of in which sectors, in which investment style, like factors, do I want to get that exposure? And as I mentioned, in my case, with a contrarian view, it is to go in the parts of the market where, because things have been out of favor for long enough, and because stocks have undershoot like their fundamental, like long-term value that you would pay if you were like a true business owner, like buying that business for the next 50 or 100 years and relying on the future cash flows to get your money back. This is how we try to think. And when we see big disconnects establishing themselves because of sentiment and the market doing its thing, that we can go in one country or one sector or one specific stock and find an opportunity that is just really disconnected from that fair value. And where we say, yes, things are maybe not great today, but we feel very confident that over the next few years, things will sort themselves out. This is where I really, really get compelled to take action. So what does it mean at this point in time? for me, it's been to buy some of these, what I call like quality cyclical stocks. I think a lot of industrial companies, a lot of commodity related supply chain companies, a lot of stocks where we will see pent up demand when the economy recovers. And I would add an element to that, which for me has been to find a lot of opportunities in terms of reopening place. So think of like retailers that have been forced to shut down because of the pandemic. And you can imagine what happened to those share prices as that took place. Mm-hmm. Well, we know that at some point things will reopen and we will go back to shopping in store, even though we might do a little bit more online. And when you see what the stocks were reflecting on companies, to give you a few examples, like some of the largest positions in the portfolios right now are a company like Simon Property, which is the largest like prime mall owner in the US. Companies I was talking about, like mining exposure, I own like stock like Komatsu, which is like a Japanese-based like mining equipment manufacturer. Those are the kind of ideas that we could buy at really great prices that were hurting at the time we bought them. But if we look longer term, I think are really well positioned to benefit from essentially a re-normalization of the world, which let's not kid ourselves, it will happen.
So interesting. And that comment about the pent-up demand and the concept of just like this level of pandemic frustration and people are ready to get out back out there and spend and, you know, get back to somewhat of a normal life. So it's just really interesting to see what will happen in the next, you know, 3 to 6 months. Really fascinating that way. Patrice, I wanted to go back to sort of the value of advice when it comes to financial advisors. Advisors obviously help investors stay focused and disciplined through market ups and downs. What is the advantage there? And how do you navigate through all the noise? We were just talking about how it's almost been the 1 year, you know, anniversary since the market meltdown, and it was such a, you know, a wild time for you then. How do you sort of stay focused through all of that?
Yeah, so I'll answer it from an investor standpoint first. I think the key for anyone is give yourself the time horizon that's adequate for the investments you're buying. And for equities, I would say like 5+ years is probably what you need. And stay disciplined. Try to keep the emotions out of it, because the tendency is to sell at exactly the wrong moment and to buy at exactly the wrong moment. What we do as portfolio managers, we cannot control like the flows coming in or out of the products, but we essentially try to do the same thing, like stay excessively focused on discipline, keep emotions out. In my case, what I try to do is stay razor sharp focused on what is the fair value of the companies that we are looking at, the companies we own, the opportunities we're considering. And what does that mean? It means, once again, the market will move a lot more than the future value of the profits a company will generate. And it's in those periods where, when things feel like everything is going wrong, if you don't have a good understanding of what's that fair value, it's very easy to say, well, we'll just sell it. I don't know what to expect. Things don't sound good. But if you are so focused, like my strategy is, to understand that fair value, to understand how far above or how far below are we to that fair value, how much of a buffer does that give us? And as a result, like, can we start buying good opportunities, even if things are not going well, if we know that those are good businesses that will survive time, will survive crisis, will survive issues they might be going through at one point in time. If we know that we are playing for, I don't know, like 100% upside to that fair value, even if it doesn't happen in the short term, it just gives us that confidence to stick around. So that's a lot of my process. What I try to do in terms of like stewardship on the products is bring that element of focused, discipline approach to having securities where we have a buffer of safety, where we know that in a normalized environment, we have good upside, and really have that flexibility to increase the risk and increase the exposures to maybe those more economically sensitive stocks when it is the right time, when we have like meaningful upside to normalized environments. But also equally importantly, when we have parts of the portfolio or parts of the market that are pricing in like overly positive scenarios over time, to have that discipline to say, that party might still be ongoing now, but I don't mind leaving it early. And I think this is a great way to avoid the big losses, the big mistakes, like the one I did with Nortel when I was a teenager. And that stuck with me. And I think that's still a big part of the process I'm trying to employ is like, go where things are inexpensive, the same way you would to buy any asset you buy. Like the price matters. Mm. And if you can buy a good asset at a good price, well bought is usually like putting the odds on your side that you don't need to sell it perfectly at the top to beat the market. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish through my strategies.
We're coming up to the end of the show here. It's just flown by, and you've so eloquently, captured your investment style and your thought process. Really, really incredible. Let's switch gears here a bit. And on a lighter note, Patrice, if you weren't a portfolio manager, what other role do you think you'd be in right now? I'm just curious to know.
Yeah. It's a loaded question. At the end of the day, I absolutely love what I do. This is not a job. This is like a passion, truly. I would be picking stocks if I was doing anything else on my free time. And I think it's true from anyone at Fidelity. I love what I do. I love where I do it. I love the people that I do it with. So it's not even really crossing my mind. Well, if I go back, like before, like knowing that finance is absolutely what I wanted to do, I always had like a pretty keen interest of like anything more analytical in nature. So I would probably be some sort of like civil engineer or something along the likes. I just like to, build stuff. It's a job, like unfortunately, the position that we are in as investment professionals is it's really hard to like see the fruits of your work. Like it's not like I can stare at something out the window and say, this is what I've built or what I accomplished, or this is how I made someone feel. In a way, like you, our clients are sadly a little bit distant from our day-to-day. And I think that's really important that we remind ourselves that I might not be seeing the fruit of what I'm building, but I'm building wealth for people, and that's what I'm trying to build today. But what I'm trying to leave with that is, as much as it might feel distant, I think it's important for our clients to know that we do think about them constantly. And I personally just constantly remind myself of, like, personally, I'm probably one of the largest or the largest owner of my funds. But I think of family members who are invested, and I think of everyone else I've met through the years that might or might be at some point or today invested in the products. And that's why we do that. And although it's not visible, if we can mitigate like those risks, if we can add some percentage points of excess returns over time, like even after like the fees of advice through that, it can lead to meaningful like upgrades in living conditions and living standards for our clients. And all that to say that we really do keep that in mind. I certainly do, even if it's maybe not as visible as if I were a civil engineer building bridges or buildings.
Well, great way to end it. You definitely have shown your passion for investing in your proven track record with Fidelity. So it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Patrice, getting your insights and perspective on things and getting your thought process today.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you very much. And we'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.